Welcome to the Thursday edition of what we are now going to be calling
Concrete Beds.
Concrete beds.
Yeah, so, well, there's a lot of news about the homeless crisis today. We have, like, for instance, Gavin Newsom is supposed to kick down another $1 billion. And we've seen how well that's worked before.
Woohoo! Where will that money go?
Yeah, so we know that the county has spent millions this year. One estimate is $50 million on helping the homeless. So why are so many people living on cement beds?
Is that just California?
The
$50 million?
That's Santa Cruz County.
Oh, that's Santa Cruz County.
Well, first we should introduce who we have with us today, Keith.
Yeah, so we have some experts here on this issue.
We have a couple of special guests. My name's Alicia Cole. Most people know me, president of the Santa Cruz chapter of the California Homeless Union. But today we also have...
I'm Angel, and I'm a member of that union.
And we also have...
Leanne Sherwood, and I'm also a member of the union.
In fact, we have roughly, according to the last count, over 50 members of the Santa Cruz Homeless Union. So we're becoming very, very strong. And we spoke at the CASH meeting, which is the city council had voted to have yet one more advisory committee. And we were, I think, very powerful influence at that meeting. And why don't you relate a little bit, Alicia, about what happened?
Well, nothing about us without us. So, of course, we were there. And they were discussing the camping ordinance that's going to come up. They're going to be discussing it again. They put it over to the CATCH for some recommendations, but the CATCH seems like they are a little bit overwhelmed with the task of, you know, the constitutionality of that and, you know, the letter from the ACLU that's very, very compelling that says that there are a lot of problems with the proposed camping ordinance that the city attorney is recommending that the city council review. And so... right now, we're kind of, you know, in a crossroads trying to figure out if they're going to go with solutions or enforcement. It seems like historically Santa Cruz goes for, you know, enforcement and criminalization. And it's an opportunity right now for them to do something else, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and there was some indication of some frustration with some of the members who, for example, there was a proposal that was actually forwarded by Justin Cummings to the city attorney and the city manager about bathrooms. Because, of course, many people complain that people are going to the bathroom outside, and that's because there are virtually no bathrooms for people to use. And so we offered a proposal of locations that we felt were strategic and a detailed plan, and we actually got community groups to provide the funding.
For six, right? Six of them.
Six. And sadly, the woman in charge of that at the CASH was completely frustrated because she couldn't get that to move anywhere. It just went into a dark hole.
Weren't they talking about a proposal like it finally went through for two?
Yeah.
But the thing is that I pointed out, you know, six. Six was the request.
Right.
Well, I think as a sociologist, my name's Leanne Sherwood, and I think it comes down to, I was just reading a passage out of Scrooge this morning, and it comes down to what kind of country we decide that we're going to have. What kind of city do we want to have? What kind of neighbors do we want to have? And I want to be part of the human race. There's a lot of, this is a revolution that we're having about what kind of people that we want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's up to us to shine the light and on the blaming and the victim blaming that goes on. It's a wider issue. And I was just saying, we may have to wait for the federal government to save us from our neighbors.
It's a war on the poor.
Well, I do think using the restroom is a human right. It's really well known that we have a lack of restrooms. 479-1080, if you'd like to call and share with us your thoughts about anything that we're talking about, because it's pretty well known that Santa Cruz is lacking restrooms. I know one of the things I hear some of the comments on, you know, anti-homeless groups, people that don't like homeless people, will say things like there's poop everywhere and things like that. Yeah. One of the things that we can focus on, a solution to that, is ask for restrooms. Support city council opening up public restrooms.
Absolutely. Housed or unhoused, I'm sure we can all agree that we'd rather have people using restrooms out there instead of, you know, seeing it in the sidewalk. Or...
Right. I think it's a good time. We have a couple calls. Let's take a phone call on this. See what we got.
Hello?
Hello.
Am I on?
Who are we speaking with?
Crystal.
Crystal!
Yes.
Hey.
Hi, Alicia. Is that Angel?
Yeah.
Hi, Angel. Hi,
Hello.
Keith.
Hello.
I just want to say how much I appreciate you guys. I swear on everything, you guys have been so much help with the community. And I don't know if you were just talking rocket science about the bathroom or not, but... I don't know. I just think that's really funny that this is even a subject.
Right.
But I really do want to appreciate and put a shout out to you guys for everything that you guys have done, for one, for the Ross Camp, and for two, just knowing your shit, Alicia.
Thank you.
Okay. Hello? So do we have another call or... Okay, not yet. Cool. So, anyway, yeah, I mean, it isn't rocket science to have restrooms, and we provided a very good proposal. But, you know, it's also this war on the poor is starting to get national headlines.
It is. The homeless union is growing nationally.
Yeah. It doesn't make sense. I mean, you said how much... Did Santa Cruz County alone get this year?
It's in the area of $50 million. It's $11 million for the police to confiscate people's belongings and to chase them around.
All that money, and they can't provide bathrooms, and they got people living in tents in a fenced-off area on River Street.
Let's for a second talk about the impact of those sweeps, like the environmental impact.
I've been seeing a lot of them around lately.
There
actually.
Is a lot of survival gear, just personal property. It's being filled up into landfills right now, and then people have to buy more stuff to survive the winter. It's
a tactic.
It's causing just destruction all the way around. It's bad for the environment. It's bad financially. It's not a solution. People aren't going to go away. They're not going to stop trying to survive. So I think that we need to find solutions. And really, really, until we can find affordable housing, stop criminalizing people's acts of survival. Stop taking their belongings.
Yeah. When we see here that on the 10th of December, they're going to have a new national homeless czar appointed by Donald Trump. And I'm very familiar with Robert Morbat.
The first thing he wants to do is cut food stamps, right?
Food stamps, and he also has for many years been advocating the abolition of outdoor food programs.
Yeah. That's going to create more homelessness out there.
And more hunger, no matter what. It's more hunger.
Yeah, 700,000 people are going to have their food stamps cut if this goes through.
The beatings will continue until morale improves.
So he came to national attention when he advocated that Food Not Bombs and Arnold Abbott stop feeding the hungry in Fort Lauderdale. We eventually won a federal lawsuit stating that it was our constitutional right to feed people outside, and so the city had to stop arresting us. And unfortunately, Arnold Abbott recently died. He was in his 90s, a World War II vet, and he was had spent his entire retirement teaching people how to cook to feed the homeless large amounts of food. And it was very tragic that he got arrested. But now Morbat is being, he has a number of failed programs. For example, in San Antonio, his premier program was a huge shelter that he was able to get funded for millions of dollars. It has roughly, I think, 50 security guards on duty at all times. And friends of mine that have stayed there said it's more like a minimum security prison. Uh-huh. So it's very, very, very frustrating for people. And so his proposals are unlikely to be in any way help alleviate the crisis of homelessness.
So what can we do? What, as a solution about him, what can we do or what can we say to the community how can we tackle the issue of what he's doing?
So one second, we need to go to a commercial break? Cool, thank you.
Do you need backup power as part of your emergency plan? During an outage, a backup...
Food Not Bombs and the Santa Cruz Homeless Union?
Alicia Cool, I am the president of the Santa Cruz Homeless Union, the Santa Cruz chapter. We are also here with...
Angel, and I am affiliated and associated and part of... everything.
The Homeless Union and yes. Everything that comes along with it.
Yeah,
and we also have...
My name is Leanne Sherwood, and I'm part of the Homeless Union and a sociologist writing a chapter on homelessness for my husband's autobiography.
All right.
Okay, so now we have on the line Steve from Watsonville, and
hey, Steve.
He's got a comment.
Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Wanted to comment on taking on the responsibility for the homeless. It's a mostly fascinated group of people that they're, you know, that's on different, they're mentally ill and so on. You know what all those facets are. When you do take on that responsibility, it's like you're taking on the responsibility of a parent for a child. Because they all, not all, but a lot do act in that fashion or they're not being responsible. And taking care of themselves, feeding themselves, doing everything that normal folks do. And so we don't seem to be taking the responsibility of that parent very, we're taking it lightly. In other words, they don't have, there's not being guidelines set on behavior. There's not encouraging them to grow, to learn to clean themselves, to feed themselves. And I know in San Antonio they have a program that they're working with, it seems to be working, where they have a large area for people to go. They have bathrooms, showers, food, a hot drink, but you're made to be there rather than, because they're camping, so you can't camp, there can't be rules saying you can't be on the street. So through law enforcement and they have, like, I guess they have the AA and NA and a lot of the facilities that people get help from, there. So
well,
I'm thinking maybe we're not taking that all the
concentration camp.
Well, Steve,
I don't know the concentration camp any more than the streets are for.
Well, I think that, Steve, I think that homeless folk are normal people. I don't see them as any different.
I don't think they're not normal. They're not functioning like normal people do.
Are you saying that we're
I'm homeless, Steve. Steve, I'm homeless, and I function really well, actually. I have multiple jobs.
I'm sorry, you're a minority.
No,
actually,
I'm a sociologist, and I would like to say that that's actually what you're doing is victim blaming. That's what we call it in sociology. And you're not basing this. I'd like to know where your source is for this information, because what it is.
My source?
Mm-hmm.
I've been in business for 35 years. I've watched the individuals start being homeless and how a lot of the progression is now.
But you're not a sociologist.
A lot of them are mentally ill. Some of them are mentally ill.
Well, there are a lot of issues, but what we're trying to do is change the narrative.
Yeah.
See, the thing is, a lot of people are experiencing poverty or experiencing the enormous rents that we have going on right now, and it through no fault of their own. We have economic refugees right now, and it's not that they're not trying. It's that despite how hard they try, they can't afford anything. And so we need to focus on that. Right now, I know that... Recently, Tomas with the Snail Movement up at the university, UCSC, has partnered to join the Santa Cruz Homeless Union, and that is full of our next generation of college students and college graduates that are experiencing homelessness. So we need to change the narrative. What you said, I'm sorry, Steve, but it was just not correct.
Steve, there's a couple.
I would like to know how long you've been working in this field.
I've only been working 40 years.
Been working with homeless.
So Keith's got 40, Leanne's got 20. Angel, what about you?
Off and on, I'd have to say.
Yeah. One of the big issues is that the social service community does treat people that live outside as children, and that's exactly one of the biggest...
Why the system is failing.
Yeah, that's why it's failing. That's why millions of dollars are spent by taxpayers here in Santa Cruz that just goes to essentially salaries and so on.
For example, let's talk about the Salvation Army. The 1220 River Street camp right now is costing upwards of $75,000 to $80,000 per month. There's about 60 tents there. It looks like an average homeless encampment. I would say it's not being managed well. I don't think the Salvation Army is really experienced in managing homeless encampments. I saw a urine bottle outside of a tent. I saw garbage. I saw tarps. I seen that it's not being held to the same fire code standard that the fire chief, Jason Hyduke, placed on the Ross camp or the Phoenix camp. And so I'm wondering why it costs $80,000. It's been proven that there are better ways to do it, self-managed, self-governed, non-profit managed, that are much more fiscally responsible and actually more successful. So that's really the route that I would like to see.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for your phone call.
That's beautiful.
We
got to
move on.
And database, please.
Yeah, so the camp that he referred to, is very famous, and they actually, if you investigate the place in San Antonio, it's the Robert Morbat, who started it, was fired on the board because it was a complete failure. And I've met people that have lived there, and it is very similar to a concentration camp, according to the people I know who have tried to use their services. And actually, if they'd have to do... or they don't have to, but the police do many, many camp sweeps in San Antonio nonetheless, even though he advertised it as a solution to ending homelessness in that city.
San Antonio, Texas.
So let's focus on programs that are working.
Yes.
Let's talk about that. Like, I know in Modesto is currently transforming a hotel into single unit shelter units. And so that's much more solution-based and dignified rather than criminalization. They're kind of going
When you say single unit, can you give a description of what you mean? Like, are they little, like, tiny home structures?
Well, no, it's a hotel room.
Oh, it's actually
hotel rooms.
Oh, okay.
That's enough space for anyone.
And one thing that I heard when I was in Marina a few weeks back, and one of the issues surrounding barriers to people using the shelter is privacy. They're afraid of being, sleeping real close to somebody that they don't know.
Trauma issues.
Yeah.
There are a lot of issues surrounding that, bed bugs, lice, scabies. All of those things can be, mitigated, I guess, if you have private rooms. And so Modesto, I think, is onto something.
Yeah.
I think Santa Cruz has a lot of money. It's sad for me to see cities with less money doing more.
Right.
Yeah, well, also, this is what I have, something that concerns me about this $1 billion. For instance, that's Gavin Newsom has announced, and he's brought in another person who was the head of dealing with homelessness for the federal government to be the czar here in California. But he actually, his policies under Obama were outrageous. And, for example, pathways to housing, which if you live on the streets, you might often get invited to fill out this form so that you could ultimately get Section 8 housing, which you may never get.
Because we don't have any units.
Because there's no units. So it's clearly a failed policy.
Pathway to nowhere.
Yep. And it also, it doesn't address the issue of poverty. It assumes that you're either a drug addict, a mentally ill person, or alcoholic. It doesn't talk anything about being an economic refugee, which a huge percentage of the people living outside really
are. That's what I am.
Right.
Or you're not trying hard enough, which is victim blaming.
Yeah.
And my sociology professor said that was America's greatest pastime. So we're going to try to change that narrative with shining a light.
We need to change that narrative.
We've got to change it.
Yeah, because if we don't.
We're brutalizing our neighbors.
It doesn't make sense why our own government is letting this happen to, its people.
And it's a humanitarian crisis.
Yeah, on a national scale.
Yeah.
So after our break, we're going to speak to Greg in Gilroy about homelessness.
Greg.
And so we're taking a short break, and then we'll be right back to take his call and to find out what Greg has to say.
All right.
Cool.
Get ready for Lake Crusade.
On the line now.
Hey, Greg.
Hi, Greg.
Gilroy. Hey, Greg.
Are you there, Greg?
Are you there, Greg?
Hello?
Yes. Hello, Greg.
Hey, there he is, Greg. Gilroy.
Greg from Gilroy.
Yeah, what do you have to say about the issue of homelessness in this area or in the world?
Did we lose him?
Because Greg is, you're on live. Whoop. He disappeared.
All right. Well, if you have anything to talk about and you want to discuss these issues with us, please feel free. We got Keith, myself, Angel, and Leanne at 479-1080. Please give us a call. Keith, what do you want to talk about now?
So, anyway, Santa Cruz Homeless Union and Food Not Bombs will be in the holiday parade this Saturday downtown on Pacific Avenue, so we hope that you join us there. And we also have a weekly meeting at the downtown post office for the Santa Cruz Homeless Union. That's at 5 o'clock every Sunday. We were just involved in a very successful effort called Camp Phoenix, where we organized a very safe sleeping and living area. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it was roughly half of the Santa Cruz police force came out early one morning and shut it down. But we were well on the way. We had showers donated by the faith community.
We were going to get a charging station. In 5 days, we had about 70 people there.
Yeah, and we had a wheelchair accessible area, and we had the only ADA compliant 24-hour toilet in downtown Santa Cruz. So that was a model that would work, and that kind of counters the idea of what I believe it was Steve was talking about treating people as children.
Like they need to be nannied, and we need to pay, you know, all this money and to monitor, you know, with law enforcement and all that.
Yeah, so the talent living on the streets is remarkable, and it is an economic crisis. When I started feeding people in 1980 outside, there wasn't even a number of homeless people. It wasn't even used as a term. There was very few people living outside. But there were some fundamental economic changes at that time, which have persisted and gotten worse, particularly under the Clinton administration and then under the Obama administration.
How things have changed since those days.
And it continues to grow. And there's a number of problems, particularly in Santa Cruz, that make this even more extreme. We have, for example, many people cannot afford to smog their vehicles because that's and they're living in them, and the city tows their home, and it's not 1 week goes by where people don't come to Food Not Bombs freaking out that they've lost their car and they don't know where to sleep. And we just received all the numbers for May 2019 of shelter bed spaces from the city, or from the county actually, that provided it. And although it misses many, many facilities and shows actually that they didn't know what the real number is, it was, the most empty beds total was 30 in one night. But that was 200-plus people lived in Ross Camp at the time. So you had to put all 200 in those 30 beds, and that was obviously not reasonable, and therefore the city violated
Martin versus Boise
right. as a result.
Yeah. And so we've been asking the city, as you may know if you follow city council meetings, one of their excuses was they didn't have a nonprofit or director. As you may know, Food Not Bombs offered to be the nonprofit in organizing a homeless camp that the city should sponsor, it should support. Now that they know that we can do it, we can manage it, we've been steadily asking, I think since January, to give us the opportunity before homeless people actually took it upon themselves to set up Camp Phoenix. And then we made sure that we paid attention to the things that were issues in the Ross camp so that it could continue to flourish and go on.
Yep,
basic rules that were adopted from the Dignity Village model, a 24-hour staffed table. All this was done with very little budget and an effort from just being organized by homeless people, self-governed. Everybody that came there agreed to the 5 basic rules. And so it's really a model that I have been asking as the president of the Santa Cruz Homeless Union for the city to support and allow instead of trying everything they can to not allow.
Yeah, and the people that are objecting to individuals living in the doorways and in their parks and so on, it would be to their advantage the city would allow the community to organize such a camp. And even at that, I remember speaking at city council before the earthquake in 88 and advocating the idea of single room occupancy hotels or SROs to get ahead of the issue of people ending up forced onto the street, because we were seeing by 88 a huge, it had the number of people living outside had gone from under 100,000 people in the United States to 750,000 in the 1990 census, and now it's in the millions.
What's our homeless population in Santa Cruz right now, around?
Well, some numbers were just recently given at, I think it was the CATCH meeting. It's about 800 in the city, and about 2,000, between 2 and 2,300 in the whole city and county. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we have Greg has called
Greg's
back.
Resurfaced.
Hey. Yay,
Greg.
Greg.
Welcome back.
So you're on the line.
We missed you, Greg.
You're live on radio, KSEO.
Greg.
No, where's Greg?
Oh my gosh, you're
Greg,
kidding me, Greg.
Greg.
Peek-a-boo.
No.
Okay, so now we'll go on to Paul.
Paul.
Hey, Paul. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Excuse me, the mother in the children.
Oh, there you go.
Here we go. Okay. Can you start again, Paul?
Yeah, and who do we have on the phone?
Paul.
Paul.
Okay, hey, Paul.
Hey, Paul. Great.
From where?
Hey, so aside from the mothers and the children and the vets, don't you think you're just enabling the people by giving them whatever they want?
That's an interesting thing. The enabling concept was initiated by Robert Marbot, and it's a myth.
Well, and describe everything they want versus need. Food and shelter and restrooms are not really wants, are they?
Yeah, they're human rights.
Yeah,
because we have a humanitarian responsibility
to our people. Why are we giving them needles and drugs?
Who's giving
I'm not sure that anybody's.
I have never given anyone
needles and drugs.
I actually am. I wouldn't say against substance abuse, but I see it as a separate issue that does affect homelessness. But we have basically three different issues, in my opinion. We have people, we have mental illness, we have substance abuse issues, and then we have economic refugees who have neither of the other two issues. They just can't afford rent. And so we need to address all those issues separately.
Speaking of economic refugees, we've got, not to be too specific, but we've got a couple who just started living in an RV. And every morning the gentleman gets up and he goes out there in his business suit and he takes off to work, and but they have to live in their RV.
Right.
I'm
here because I have hepatitis C and I have stage 4 liver cancer, and I would have died in Florida. So I came here and I'm living in my van and I'm getting treatment. I have 3 degrees, 20 years of working with addicts, and basically what you're committing here is hate speech against a vulnerable population.
I am committing hate speech?
Well, you're calling us all drug addicts, dude.
I did not say that you're all drug addicts.
Well, you intimated there's a lot of us that are, and then we're not worth helping.
No, what's happening is I made a statement, and all four of you guys talked at once, and then you continue on, and you disregard what I say.
So you were suggesting that by feeding people and supporting people that we were enabling them?
No, I said aside from the mothers and the children and the vets, you're enabling all these other bums to do drugs as they please.
Well, I don't like the word bums.
All four of you, or however many there are just talking over me when I have something to say.
Well, you're calling us a bum, so we're going to defend ourselves.
Okay, but that's what you are.
How come
only mothers vets are worthy of housing, food, and basic needs being met? I think this is part of changing the narrative.
Deserve it. And if you're just a drug addict, you shouldn't get all this stuff for free.
Well, then
we should starve drug addicts, make them be out in the freezing cold. And they should just die on the sidewalk. Is that what you're saying?
They don't need a car to eat food. Food's everywhere. They can go
eat. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, where do you live? Wow. I'd like to come and harvest the neighborhood,
food
dude.
Is everywhere. I think food should be everywhere.
How much education have you achieved in your life, dude? How much education?
He said walk into the woods and eat a leaf.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your phone call.
I'm not a
That's funny.
Nice. Take a class.
So moving right along, the holiday parade.
Well, first we have another call from Pete in Santa Cruz.
Hey, Pete.
Hi, Pete.
Will you be going to the holiday parade, Pete?
Well, if I don't have to work, yeah, I definitely will.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah, weather depending. But, you know, I wanted to ask the nice gal, and I apologize, I can't remember your name, the sociologist.
Leanne.
Was the,
Thank
Leanne.
You. And nobody usually calls me nice. Thank you. I really am.
You know, so for me, now we talk about change, when you talk about changing the narrative.
Yes.
And that's the problem I have, right? And mm-hmm. I think the caller before me was an example that people look outside with their eyes and they see what they see and they interpret that. They see people on the streets that look sometimes like they're confrontational or they're threatening or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, causes people to assume that they're on drugs.
Right, and they globalize and so, that.
So with people's eyes, they have this perception.
Sure.
And you talk about changing the narrative and data and stuff, but then people get in these arguments and they want to prove, you know, they know more than you or blah, blah, blah. So you get caught in this quagmire, but with their eyes, I think somehow...
Well, they're misinterpreting their environment.
We need to somehow change it so when we see these people, we don't see them in that light.
Right, exactly.
You know,
I think this is a perfect time to talk about the multi-levels of homelessness that we have. You're talking about the most visible. That's probably like, you know, the 1%, and they might actually fall into those two categories that we were talking about before. That might be the percentage that's falling into the mental health or substance abuse category. But part of changing the narrative is realizing that anyone who's housing inadequate right now, like for instance, if you're doubled up, if you're staying with your parent, if you're a student that's sleeping in your car, you're homeless. And so part of changing the narrative is realizing that homeless applies to such a more broad spectrum than what you've described. And so when we're focusing on solutions and how do we treat people, we need to keep in mind that there is a large category and that is very unfair to treat the whole wide population as just the visible drunk guy that you might see on the corner.
And addiction is an illness. It's a brain illness. And when are we going to bully people who have diabetes? Are we going to tell them they're not worthy of society's help? I have trauma and stress issues from Me Too stories, and I'm getting treatment for my brain, and I'm also getting treatment for my liver, and I'm also a published author. My book is called Around the World on a G-String, and I'm writing another book on homelessness now, so that's what I'm doing.
And I feel like anyone, even if you are, you know, the guy who has substance abuse issues on the corner, he still deserves housing, he still deserves food. So that's where my heart is at.
We have an obligation as, you know, humans to treat each other with kindness and to make sure that we all have enough food to eat and roofs over our heads, and that's
479-1080 if you want to call us about
You know, there's the division within this country, and we need to come together and figure this out to help each other out.
Well, thank you so much, Pete, for your
could I ask one more question?
Yeah, one more question. Perfect.
So when you just said that, it kind of segued exactly. We need to come together. So this is kind of what I have problems with the conversation, but what rubs me wrong is that you're criticizing the city of Santa Cruz, right? We're criticizing the city, but to me, and I live in the city, we're the only ones having the discussion, and still, we haven't drawn the line like Capitola, Scotts Valley, some of these other cities that said, hey, we're going to enforce, period. There's no discussion. You're going to move on. We're still doing that in Santa Cruz.
I wouldn't say that Santa Cruz is the only person being held, or, you know, the only entity or being talked about right now or being held accountable. I think that this discussion is broad and that
we
do need to bring more of the county into it.
Yeah, it's
but
time
you're
for a break.
Right.
We'll be back. We'll have something we'll talk about when we come right back.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Now we're taking a break. We'd like to thank all of our sponsors.
Yep. Thank you so much.
Let me ask, do you have discomfort?
Okay, Greg, finally we can get you online here. So, welcome to...
Hi, Greg, welcome.
Hello, Greg.
I moved, so I'm sitting about 25 yards from the cell tower and have a good solid 5 bars now, so I should be okay.
Oh, thanks. I hear your voice, Greg.
Hey.
Good. I was asking Alicia about joining the union. I didn't hear a response. I don't know when I got off.
Oh, well, if you would like to join the union, you can call me directly. We have paperwork that you can sign. We'll go over some of the, you know, the mission statement. You'd have to agree to those things. You can call me at 831-431-7766. And like Keith was saying, we have a weekly meeting every Sunday at the Food Not Bombs meal.
We welcome the community to come down to it.
You're totally welcome to join us, and we have paperwork right there for you to join the union. And that's at the downtown post office, right outside of the downtown post office, across from the clock tower, and it's 5 o'clock on every Sunday.
Yeah, and then also you can come down if your listeners are invited to come Saturday at 4 to 6 to get a meal, or Sunday 4 to 6 at the downtown post office. And also, if you are in need of things like bedding, clothing, and so on, you can get those items there. And if you have things to donate, and particularly socks,
tents, sleeping bags,
purchased underwear, blankets,
it's
coats,
it's a good spot to donate those items as well.
Canned goods,
tarps, those kind of things. People are definitely in need of those things. And survival gear is a real issue throughout the entire United States. We see these sweeps happening where there was a huge one that just happened in San Francisco, where dozens and dozens of people lost everything they owned. And so they have to figure out, with no resources at all, how to get more dry clothing, how to get tents. In the last segment, we had a person that was talking about how the food was always available. And I can't tell you, in the 40 years I've been feeding people on the streets, how frequently it is that people rush up to the Food Not Bombs meal going, "Are you still got food? Do you still have food?" And I've heard from many people that they haven't eaten in days.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of posts on my Facebook group of people asking, you know, where can I get a meal? Even though, you know, Santa Cruz does the Veterans Memorial, that big dinner every year, I was actually surprised. There were several people that didn't know about that and that were hungry and alone on Thanksgiving.
Yeah. It's hunger is a much bigger, and many of the people that come to eat with us actually do have apartments. But they just don't have the resources beyond their rent to eat all month long. So these things this is quite a crisis.
Are you still there, Greg?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
The reason I'd like to join the union is because, you know, we have a lot of people that need help and don't know what to do for themselves. Yeah. They need a shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And my position is follow the Constitution. There was a famous case called the belligerent claimant, wherein the claimant, you know, would not drop any of his rights or agree to anything, and the judge finally said that people need to realize that the Constitution is a fighting document. It always has been. You have to be belligerent and stand on your rights if you want to keep them.
Right on,
exactly.
Brother.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yep. And that's what we are doing at the Santa Cruz Union of the Homeless and at the reestablishment of the National Union of the Homeless,
right,
which is growing very, very rapidly, because people's constitutional rights to privacy, to, to possess
own property,
to be able to travel where they want to in public spaces, all these things are being threatened. And this is what I think we're at a turning point here in the United States, where the war against the homeless and the poor is escalated to such an extent that many people living on the streets don't believe they really have rights. And we want to assure people, no matter how little resources you have and how poor you are still afforded rights.
And you have a voice.
Yeah, we call that learned helplessness.
Yeah.
We don't need that.
That's what we're hoping to achieve. Well, thank you so much, Greg, for calling back. Do you have any final statements?
Thank you, Greg. I'm really glad you called back, Greg.
Thanks, Greg.
Somebody mentioned $20 million to one county. It sounds like we need to find somebody with an accounting background
and go into the offices and run us out.
Yes.
Yeah, think of fun fact. Tonight, Catherine Austin Fitz will probably be talking about that on the George Norrie show on Coast to Coast. But she has what used to be an auditor for HUD, and she's an expert on how the money disappeared. So I hope everybody tunes in tonight to listen to
her. She doesn't know where any of it is. I've heard her speak on Coast to Coast before. You're right. Yeah, she's good.
Great.
Yeah, we can do it ourselves.
Where's all the money?
Where's it going?
Thank you so much, Greg.
Thanks, Greg.
Great.
See you Sunday at least.
Okay.
So we're going to do a break? Okay, we can go to David now.
David in Santa
Cruz. Scotts Valley.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Great.
Hi, David.
Thank you.
I like your show. I agree with a lot of what you have to say, but I think something you're not taking into account. I mean, I believe that homelessness and poverty and mental illness, these are all issues that can, in fact, be solved because they're not metaphysical issues. They're logistical issues. It's a question of whether or not we as a society are willing to change our attitudes and pony up the money because it's a whole lot more money than what we were talking about.
And spend the money the right way.
There's that too. But I mean, housing a person in this country at this time is a phenomenally expensive proposition. Yeah. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't do it. But if you're up against somebody who objects to food and housing vouchers being given to a quote-unquote drug addict or a quote-unquote bum or whatever term you wish to choose, then imagine the reaction that there will be if we're talking about the actual cost of a permanent home.
Yeah.
So I think a change in attitude has to be precipitated by advocates, and I know at least some, if not all of you, are advocates. And what I'd like to suggest is that the way in which you advocate has to be adjusted not to the people who already agree with you. It has to be adjusted to the people who disagree with you, who do not want to participate, who do not want money to change the situation.
Do you have a suggestion? Because, you know, that's kind of like the golden thing that I've been working on.
Yeah.
And so if you have a suggestion, like, how do you change the hearts of some of these people? I feel like just won't bend. They think it's enabling to feed people.
It's called Dunning-Kruger
syndrome. It's hard for me to have a civil conversation sometimes because I feel like they're the person who thinks I should die on the street.
Yeah.
So how can I kindly change their heart about that?
Well, I can give you an example right now. I'm totally on your side, and you guys just interrupted me and wouldn't let me get a word in. So the first thing that you need to do, if you want to get people who aren't on your side to be on your side, is to actually listen to them, even if what they have to say is disagreeable. I mean, obviously, if they're assaulting you, you don't need to listen to that. But I think that that's key, is that you have to, if you want to have them listen to you, then the starting point has to be you listening to
them. Well, we're listening, and I'm not trying to interrupt, but the thing is about solutions, and I can only listen so much to, you know, the misconceptions, the hate speech, the, you know, get a better job, you're not trying hard enough, why don't you just move somewhere else? I can only listen to so much of that before I cut someone off and say, hey, what is your suggestion?
Yeah, it's abusive speech.
Listening is the solution, and I'll tell you why. Because when you listen actively, that's when you go down the road and you establish a relationship and you discover with that person and that person discovers with you that there's some sort of common ground that you didn't see previously.
Okay.
And that never, ever happens when there's not listening taking place.
Okay, I have a degree in psychology, and I agree with you that if somebody wants to listen, but a lot of what we're encountering is just doubling down, and they don't want to talk, they don't want to listen. It's called Dunning-Kruger syndrome. And first of all, I'm not going to allow people to abuse me verbally, and I don't really believe that I'm going to change anybody's heart. I'm past that. I've been working in the mental health care field for 20 years, and I'm pretty much convinced that once people's heart is two sizes too small, I don't really think that they can grow it.
Okay, so time for another break. I'm sorry. I don't understand what you're saying.
Oh, we're going to go on to...
Well, and speaking on that, I really think that, again, no matter what the situation, we need to find solutions. And so I think that a lot of talking and a lot of listening has been gone on. We know exactly what the solutions are. And it's like where people are not willing to implement them. There was a humongous study that said it's cheaper, it's more cost-effective, it's better for everyone to supply housing.
And if
why are we still talking about this or listening?
We know what works.
If you think about it, too, and if we got people into homes, all of our lives would improve, including people that are already in houses. So the morale in the country would improve in general, right?
Well, thanks. So, we're taking another break.
All right, break time.
Break.
I'm going to mention the rap study.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? It's a neighborly day in this beauty wood, a neighborly day.
Okay, welcome back. So, like this, Keith McHenry.
I always wanted to live in a neighborhood with you.
Yeah. So many of us are living in your neighborhood, and we are your neighbors.
We are neighbors.
So we have Renee on the line, and they've been on for way too long. So let's hear what Renee has to say.
Hi, Renee.
Hey, Renee.
Hi, Alicia and Angel. How are you guys doing?
Good, well, good. Don't forget about Keith and Leanne.
Hi. Oh, I'm sorry, Keith and Leanne.
I'm just joking.
How are you?
Hey.
I just have so many questions for you guys.
Okay.
So you guys are called the Homeless Advocates Union, correct?
There's a National Union of the Homeless that's currently being reestablished, and then there's the Santa Cruz chapter of the...
It's Leo.
Sure.
I think on both sides there's definitely, like, crazy people.
But,
you know what I mean? That you can't get.
But mentally ill people are 10 times more likely to be assaulted than they are to assault somebody else.
Right, that's actually a fact. Well, and I don't know if many people know, but the reason that I kind of became more in the advocate realm of this is because I was attacked November of last year, not this November, but the prior November. I was parked over
out of my neighborhood
on the west side of Santa Cruz in my RV,
here.
And
I'm
at
rich.
2 o'clock
you're
in the morning,
not, you're not, you don't belong
in my neighborhood.
Bang, bang,
and GTF out of here, and screaming, and it scared my family. It woke us up from a sleep, and I looked out the window, and there's a homeowner. We weren't even near anybody's house. We're actually parked near nobody's house, but at the end of sort of a residential area, and we weren't bothering him, we're just sleeping, and he starts screaming, you know, get out of my neighborhood, you're not welcome here, I'm rich, you're not, you don't belong in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
And
so we have another caller that's been waiting quite a long time, Tom, in Santa Cruz.
Hey,
about
Tom.
Not listening.
Hello.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. I wanted to respond to the caller last hour who mentioned, was talking about listening. And I think he was absolutely right. It's very important to listen. But I think that you have listened quite a bit from what I've seen. And I think the people who need to listen are the ones who have not experienced homelessness. The ones who don't understand what it's like, what's involved, the factors that contribute to it, and the hurdles that are in the way of pretty much every avenue that exists to pull yourself up from when you fall into that position. I mean, I have friends who are on the street, and I try to do what I can to help them out, but it's still not enough. And you know, I have friends who have attempted suicide because of the position of being on the street and not being able to get yourself out.
Yeah. Did you know that our city council member, Drew Glover, recently published something? There was a petition asking city council to sleep outside for 1 week before deciding on this camping ordinance, and he published a really well-written piece called, like, What If It Was Me Sleeping Outside, and he described the things that you're saying, and he was only... the petition called for 1 week, but he was only able to do one night. And he said that if he'd done any longer than that, that it would have been such a mental anguish and breakdown on him
stress.
That he wouldn't have been able to continue his job as a city council member and function and do the things that were expected of him if he'd continued. So one night, that's all he could do.
Yeah, I read that online. I was very impressed by his words and for what he did to put himself in those shoes, and that is admirable.
Yes,
I wish more of the city council would do that.
I wish they had all done it,
right?
Yes, we do.
Yeah, and I have to say, I am absolutely livid at what the city has been doing, because they're violating human rights of people who are just trying to survive on the streets, who have no means to, you know, to get into shelter, who would love to be in shelter.
Oh, on the
and it seems like the city is doing everything to make the problem worse and not make it better.
Yeah.
I'm exasperated.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for noticing, you know, what's really happening around here.
Yeah. So we have another caller, Eileen from Santa Cruz.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
I've been in Santa Cruz since 1969 and survived a lot of social hypocrisy and what's left of the middle class. It seems to be there's wealthier and more conservative. And I want to recommend you all to read the incredible book. It's even more vital now. Jeremy Rifkin's book, The End of Work.
Huh. Wow, that's
cool.
Yeah.
And this automation is just eating up everything. I mean, we're living a science fiction nightmare.
Yeah.
And I've been a unpaid social worker, activist, forever.
Oh,
and I fortunately live in pseudo-socialistic housing, known, of course, as HUD and HA.
Yep.
And I wrote a commentary back in 2001 that it seems San Jose and Santa Clara is buying up Santa Cruz. That's there's no more room to grow in San Jose. And we're going to be, I hope we aren't all pushed out of California and other places and people.
And nobody's considering the service workers, like all the people that service.
To everybody.
Right.
But I think it's easier if it's part of your own community doing the policing, because we have love and understanding and respect.
There's a small element that I think is out of everyone.
But you don't care if we have a safe place to sleep at night, you know, without being harassed so that we can at least wake up to service you the next day type thing. And I don't mean you. I mean just the general, you know, the people that are against solutions. It's like, this is the reality of what's happening here.
Well, I often wish that the market would crash, and I wish half of California would leave the state. And the crucial reality is that humans are still overbreeding, and real estate is a poker game.
Yeah, right.
And along with insurance companies, they're the whores of capitalism.
I said it, lady.
One more thing, please. From my commentary I wrote back in 2001. I'm damn poor, rich in spirit and love. I don't want to see this entire county become a sprawling, dehumanizing, computer-ruled, smog-infested, ugly, population-dense, politically conservative, selfish, money-driven, dispassionate, no longer unique place to live.
And how
damn.
You know, and somebody would say, well, why don't you get the hell out? If I were wealthy, I'd buy a cute little, I'd buy a little house in Davenport and have an electric car and or go live in England.
Thank you so much for your call.
Yeah, I think another book that's of interest would be Homewreckers, which recently came out, showing that that 8 million houses were foreclosed on, and the author questioned what happened to those 8 million houses, and actually many of those houses were actually picked up by venture capitalists and are sitting empty, and their study recently showed that there are more empty homes in LA County than homeless, more empty homes in San Francisco County than homeless. So it's I think that she was at the root of what's going on, is the economic system is not really working for everyone.
It's like, I think they're called, what, the La Bahia apartments that sit right across the street from the boardwalk.
Yeah, those are empty.
Yeah, they've been empty for quite some time, for some years now, and there's something, what, like 144
units?
Apartment units in there, and we could use one.
That's the beginning of a potential homeless shelter, yeah. And it's got individual units.
Yeah.
I want to talk about, too, the idea of, of people owning only one house. Like, somebody brought this to I think it was the meeting on homelessness, and it was our city council member, Drew Glover's meeting on homelessness, and he said that you're only allowed to own one house in this other country.
Finland, I think.
Right, yeah. And then you can own two houses for only a period of 3 months, and then, you know, you can... Because that's like a transition period. You have to choose one. You can only own one.
Yeah.
So that there's enough for everybody.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, and in the...
What do you guys think about that? 479-1080. Give us a call. 479-1080.
Okay, we have Vern and... La Selva Beach.
Vern and La Selva.
Hi, hey, Vern.
How you doing?
Great. Good. Thanks for calling.
Hanging in there, Vern.
Hey.
Thanks for calling the concrete bed.
I was born here in 1951, watched Santa Cruz grow, as you have witnessed, but I've also watched the politics of the county get rid of every employer that we have, and just because they say they can do it. When UCSC and the politics took out frozen food in Santa Cruz, Watsonville.
Yeah.
How many jobs do you think we lost there?
And that's a good point, because a lot of mom and pop small businesses, even in the Capitola Mall, I've been noticing, like, you know, businesses are just falling off. A lot of people are losing jobs.
Well, even for businesses, the rent is too dang high.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see that on Pacific Gap.
But back up. Watsonville was like a mecca of frozen food.
Yeah.
And so they attacked Richard Gill, who was a big farmer in Monterey County. Hmm. They figured, oh, we'll just tag him out.
That's corporation.
In doing that, you took out, not you, but politics took
Wait
out Pillsbury, Green Giant, Smucker's, Bird's Eye. And so you figure in those seven frozen food plants, there was 1,000 women per plant. Now that's families. Those are people that had roots here.
Mm-hmm.
And their families had roots.
Yeah.
And so when there's no jobs, you got to get rid of that home and go someplace, right?
Yeah.
So what happened to all those homes? They just went up and up and up and up and up in price. And now nobody can afford to live here.
That's correct.
Right.
Yep. Except outside.
So the some people think the answer is to leave. Just everybody leave.
No, it's not the answer.
We're going to stay outside.
The answer is to stay out of, local politics unless you want to be in local politics.
Local politics are in all of us.
But what UCSC and the followers did to Watsonville is criminal. And for them to sit there and brag about it, because if you Google up the frozen food strikes of Watsonville, the SDS takes responsibility for that. And And does anybody there remember who the SDS is?
No.
No. Students for a Democratic Society.
Oh.
Yeah, you guys got to go back in your,
yeah,
your thinking cap our, and look
we
at...
We can Google it now.
Who's, yeah.
Well, okay, well, you've had some really interesting ideas.
Really great points.
Yeah, yeah. Good points.
Okay, so we're going to go to a short break again, and we'll be right back.
We call it the Active Town. Hello, I'm
thanks for tuning in to Cement Beds. And so, Alicia, we had a meeting the other day, and because of the rain and the suffering that we're seeing on the streets and the lack of action by the city, we ended up asking this, actually having demands for the city council,
right,
to take action. Could you read a little bit of that?
Yeah, well, if you don't know, on the next, there's a hiatus. We're going to have one more city council meeting, and then there is a six-week break. And so they're going to be talking about winter shelter, mm-hmm, and potentially opening up some sort of winter shelter. But the concern is that it won't be adequate. I've been hearing from some of the CATCH members that they're talking about perhaps reopening the VFW, but that will only supply 40 more beds, leaving us at the same deficit that we've been in for years now. And so the Santa Cruz chapter of the California Homeless Union, along with HUF, Conscience in Action, Food Not Bombs, and Food Not Bombs, I should say, has requested, it's a demand, but I'm being nice and I'm saying request, that the city open enough winter shelter space for a minimum of 250 people. Because, you know, we know that the camps that they've been shutting down have had an average of 70 to 250 plus people, you know, at the Ross camp.
Right.
And so we know that immediately that's the minimum that we need to take some of the pressure off of downtown, off of the alcoves where everybody's at. I mean, that would give some relief, but it's just the tip of the iceberg of what we actually need. So we've asked for that, enough shelter space for at least 250 people, and that the city direct its police to suspend all enforcement of no trespassing on public property, closed park, public nuisance, blocking the sidewalk, and illegal lodging, including stay-away police orders, until this shelter space is available, unless there's a pressing health and safety concern. So we're not asking, you know, police,
yeah,
to stop enforcing the law, but the law as it applies to targeting homeless people for acts of survival needs to immediately stop.
It's a fascist law.
And we've also said that unless these demands are met, unfortunately, as we knew with Camp Phoenix, direct action could be a result in not supplying this. People are going to survive. They're going to do what they need to do to survive, and that, you know, could include seeking shelter, food, all those things. And, you know, with or without the support of the people who are sleeping in their warm, cozy beds, you know, people have to survive on the streets.
Right. We had a report at a meeting or two ago of 14 people sleeping in a parking garage out of the rain, and in the middle of the night, the police came and drove everyone out into the rain. And that doesn't really serve anybody. It doesn't really, no one was parking there in the middle of the night. It wasn't, they weren't bothering people.
Right.
And all it did was, cause people to be wet and potentially ill and possibly dying.
It's
like what she said, I agree. It's a form of fascism.
And back to, you know, one of the issues that, you know, one of the problems for an attempt to reframe, and I have to thank MZ for letting us have this program, because
thank
it's
you,
very,
MZ.
Very
yes,
important.
Definitely. Thank you, MZ.
And the thing is that we, you know, the Manhattan Institute, which is a think tank, the Discovery Institute, Sinclair Broadcasting, aspects of the federal government, the state government, create a narrative intentionally that keeps repeating this falsehood that everyone outside is on drugs, everyone outside
not
is there,
worthy.
Yeah, that it's all our fault that we've can't. Yeah, you know, I've been homeless at least 5 times, and all but one, it was a health crisis that caused me to end up on the streets. And the one time it wasn't a health crisis, it was because of the I got evicted from my place in San Francisco, mm-hmm. and I didn't have the resources because I was my wages were so low, I couldn't get back into another place, and I actually lived on the streets of Kansas City, Missouri, as a way to get off the streets, which was terrible in the winter. And fortunately, the rents were much, much cheaper, and it was not hard to get a job. But it was, you know, it was just a fortunate thing that that I had that ability to do that. And it was heartbreaking to leave my friends and my whole world of San Francisco and start over. So, you know,
and you can only do that so many times. That's not even a feasible option for some of our people. I know people like to say move to a more affordable place, but a lot of our people, I don't know if you've been down to, you know, the corner of Front and Laurel lately and seen that there is a whole group of people in walkers and wheelchairs.
Yeah,
sure. They can't just up and leave to another state.
And those are the injuries we can see, not even mentioning brain illnesses.
They show up there and they chase them off that corner.
Yeah, I know. And Muna and those people, I mean, and when we say about beds, it's very interesting. The beds are actually, so the listeners know, are gym mats on the floor. And they try to give you 8 inches between shoulder to shoulder, and the 8 inches between your feet and the feet of the people sleeping across from you.
Sardines.
And some of the people, I just can't even understand how they can even get up out of the gym.
It's at 479-1080. If you want to give us a call and talk
beautiful.
About this, and we have a couple phone calls.
Yeah, we have Lynn calling from Santa Cruz.
Hey, Lynn.
Hi, Lynn. Hi. I've been following you guys online, and I did see the demands list, and so I'm curious what the direct action is going to be if your demands aren't met, because it's gonna affect the whole community.
We don't
want another Ross Camp drug addict, and I also feel that if we were inviting so many homeless drug addict bums to Santa Cruz, then we could truly take care of our real homeless and our elderly.
Well, I'd like to speak to that, Lynn.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, Food Not Bombs has groups all over the world. We're in 1,000 cities in 65 countries. And what I find is that virtually every city in the United States claims that they invite all the drug addicts to their town. And so it can't be true. It's a definite myth. I was homeless in the back of a pickup truck. That's where I was sleeping in Cleveland, Ohio. And everybody there in January when it was 5 below 0 was telling me how all the homeless came to Cleveland, Ohio because they had the best soup kitchen in the country. And that obviously is not true. So this is one of the many myths that we need to overcome.
Speak on that, Keith. You run Food Not Bombs. Don't your numbers maintain the same each and every week, even though you serve, what is it, a 9-course delicious vegan meal? You're serving that each and every week, but you're... people aren't just coming, you know, you didn't start out serving 100 and then all of a sudden, hey, a free meal, there's 500.
Yeah,
serving the same people each week, aren't you?
Yeah, it's roughly 150 at the beginning of the month and 200 and or so at the end of the month. And
the same faces each week?
Yep.
Yeah.
And occasionally somebody gets a place and they don't show up and then a new person might come. But all the new people that ever come to eat with us were people who lost their apartments in Santa Cruz. And they come to us and ask where the shelter is, and then we attempt to get people into those shelters, but sadly, there's virtually no there's no empty space.
So it is the real myth that if you provide basic needs, more people will come.
Right.
And to respond to your question about direct action,
yeah.
That actually, there's nothing planned right now. That just means that you know, people, like I said, people are going to protect their life.
Yes.
So if that mean that could mean a number of organizational things that homeless people choose to do in order to survive.
Right. And I work with drug addicts. I myself have been recovered 19 years. I lived out of a backpack for 10 years, traveled through 13 countries, and worked in 6 of them. It's a brain disease that we treat just like any other disease, and people who are addicts are not bad people. They're sick people.
And the other problem we have is just the other day, a woman came up to me at the Food Not Bombs table, and she said, "You have the number for Janice." And I said, "Okay." And we called Janice, and it turned out there were no room, and she had to call. And it turns out you have to call every day for 2 months to get a bed.
Treatment is
and
very
there's just
difficult.
Not enough treatment. So we really need to organize our community to
I think
demand
if your big
more
fear is
treatment.
Drug addicts, you should be supporting Janice instead of focusing on, you know, all homeless people in general. And if we provide shelters or food, we're going to attract homeless people. What you should be focusing on is Janice. We only have 14 residential
beds. Thank you so much for your call. Okay, and then we're going to go to
treatment beds.
To Nancy in Carmel.
Nancy.
She has a solution.
Hello. First of all, I have a question. Am I right in understanding that when you go to a shelter, if they put limits on the hours, you can be there like from 8 p.m. till 5 a.m. or something like that?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, you're
it
absolutely.
It depends on the shelter.
Yeah,
shelter
you're absolutely right.
Some
there's usually, you know, limits on what you can and can't.
And that's not a huge problem for the homeless, right?
It is a huge problem.
It is a problem for the homeless.
Yeah.
If you were to drive by Coral Street, actually, you would see a lot of people that weren't able to make it into the shelter. They're just strewn about.
I believe the only 24-hour shelter that we have is the Rebley Family Shelter, and that's for only people with families with children.
But
there's a waiting list.
Yeah, I would say not just anyone.
Okay,
just show
well, let's change the hour to show up, but let's keep in mind the hour that you have to get out of there by.
Yeah, so for instance,
would that make things any different?
I think that the right now, for example, the many people complain to me that they have to quickly eat their meal, our meals from 4 to 6 on Saturdays and Sunday, because they have to get down to the corner of Front and Laurel to catch a van that then takes them to about 5 blocks to the shelter on Laurel Street, and then they have to get in the van early in the morning, and they're dropped back off at that parking lot, and that's a substantial number of people living outside, and that's why people are at that intersection. So it's very, very hard for a person to keep a job, to and also you're often limited to the amount of property you can bring with you. Sometimes
one bag. And the shelter's full, so a lot of people, on average. Well, the Laurel Street shelter's filling up at night, so we have no place during the day. Nighttime places are full.
Yeah.
I brought that issue up only because I thought of a solution, but it's not a solution for all the homeless on a permanent level. It's a solution to get out of the cold weather.
It's a step.
Okay?
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is valid or not. I'm just throwing it out there.
Sure.
But our public school system is the federal government, right? Or is it state government?
Federal.
State government.
Is it state?
I think it's state.
I don't know. I'm not
anyway,
well, it's usually by counties. And
well,
state,
anyway,
you know.
All the public schools plus the UCSC have really large gymnasiums. And if there could be a way at no charge, because they don't use them between 10 p.m. and 8 a.m., if there would be some way to get in there to keep these folks warm enough, and there's plenty of room, and there's bathrooms, and there's showers.
See, I think the absolute, what we need is to put pressure on our government officials to create housing for people out there. I think that's going to be the...
But I think until the housing is available, what you're suggesting actually really sure. is a good idea, yeah. and I don't think that we should just be using that
it's
kind of universe.
Like a
every
stop. Cap.
It's like an interim.
We have the arenas, we have the, you know, the Warriors arena, we have the Civic Center, we have a lot of places.
Yeah, there's a lot of space.
Sears, we have the empty Toys R Us building. We just have empty places all over the place.
Yeah,
we
yeah.
could be utilizing all those. And I think if we did that at one time, you know, just started massively using these solutions and these options, we would see a huge dent. I think that's really what it's going to take.
Wait, are you talking about
is
people?
A massive effort at one time to really see a dent.
I like that. I like the way that sounds.
Well, I think we need more room for commercial break again, and so but your ideas are great.
I love
and
your ideas.
Thank you for your call. And we're going to bring it up.
Well, thank you.
Good thank luck. You, Brittany.
Hello, this is.
Okay, we're back with Cement Beds today, and we have Brittany from Santa Cruz who wants to make some comments.
Hey, Brittany.
Hi, Brittany.
Hey, Leanne.
Hi, sweetie.
Hi, everyone. I was homeless in the beginning of July. I chose to be homeless because I was tired of my job, feeling like that's all I did was work. And I had every intention on finding another job. I had one lined up, ready to go. As soon as I got back to the area I wanted to live in, they said I was not hireable, but they didn't look at the fact that I was with the company for like 3 years and I never missed a day. I never called in sick. All they could see was the fact that when I quit, I didn't quit the right way.
So you didn't get rehired?
Yeah.
Right, but I found a job eventually. It got back on my feet. But I just called my truck and I choose to be now. I don't really see myself paying half of all of my money to live in some place and then have X amount of money left over.
That's because you're awoken.
Well, there are a lot of people who are doing, like, who are doing that. Like, I seen a post recently on Facebook that says, I paid all my rent, now I can sit in these walls and starve to death, you know?
Exactly.
So,
yeah, it's quite a problem. And all you need is to lose your job for a couple of months, and how do you get back on your feet when you have to pay 2 months deposit plus the month you're there? You really have to save up a lot of money. And then there's all these, there's a person in Aptos who built and designed his own house on the beach, really beautiful house, and he ended up getting red tagged. So he had to take out more loans, and anybody that's a property owner in Santa Cruz County knows how much the permits are. They're like they're a killer.
Right.
And he had to borrow money just to deal with that, and he couldn't keep up with it.
It's unsustainable.
And he ended up buying an RV, and I think of that because, Alicia, you were facing losing your place that you were renting because of an illegal rental that the landlord
had. That's why I'm in an RV.
And so he thought ahead. He bought an RV, and his mortgage was with Wells Fargo, and they finally came to a point where they're evicting him, and he was in his RV, and he couldn't take it anymore, and his wife was packing up the last of the stuff inside the house, and he shot himself in the head.
That's
and
terrible.
The sad thing is that that happens so frequently that Wells Fargo sent them a form letter to the survivors.
Yep.
That's horrible.
That
was a relatively well-to-do person who lived here for years. He raised his children in that house. His grandchildren had visited for holidays, and he was actually a person of some means. And I'm kind of shocked at how many people I know who had very nice properties in this town who then came to me and to eat at Food Not Bombs and were very, very distressed that they were at that point. And,
well, thank God for my RV, because, you know, you got me thinking, too. If I didn't have my RV, I have children.
Yeah.
I have a family. If I didn't have my RV, the only options for me, since we don't have any sort of survival camp, the city won't let you band together in a safe environment if you're living in a tent. I would maybe be able to stay on the list for Rebley Shelter probably for several months. If I got in, I'd only be allowed to stay there for 6 months, and I'd be out on the street
again. You'd be in the same position.
But what Brittany was saying, though, is that she doesn't want to become a slave to the system, have to go to work all day just to come home tonight, at night, just to have a place to sleep and then get up and do it all over again. That's not a quality of life type of
right. Life. Right. Quality of life is what we're talking about. Yeah. And we have banded together. This is one of my family. Brittany is a wonderful, hardworking, lovely human being who's a great inline skater and just wonderful. And she chooses not to be a slave to the system.
Yeah, so Lynn, we've unfortunately we don't have much time left, and so I wanted to why don't we wrap up a little bit here with some of the things coming up. We do have one caller, Nick, and we'll take Nick's call, and then we'll close out the show. So back, Nick.
Nick.
Hey everyone. Hey, I just wanted to kind of dig into some of Brittany's comments. You know, what I heard her say, and I heard you guys repeat, it sounds like we all understood her.
Uh-huh.
She made the choice to stop working and become homeless.
No.
And I heard Franklin refer to that as being woke. My question is, how is it that, to me, that seems like being stupid. I mean, why would she expect that she cannot work and then the rest of working society then would step in and pay for accommodation? That's not what she said. She said she quit.
She also got another job.
Yeah, and she got another job.
After a period of unemployment and being homeless, she chooses to live like that.
I think there's two parts to this.
The question is, why should the rest of working society pay to subsidize a person who refuses to work by choice? That seems crazy to me. Franklin, a question for you.
Sure.
You don't work, but I saw you spreading wood chips around Ross Camp 2.0.
I do a lot of work. However, my work, I do it for non-pay, but I do put in a lot of hours and a lot of community service.
I'm writing a book.
Why are you on disability? If you're able to work, why are you on disability?
Well, that's for my own personal reasons.
Yeah.
Taxpayers are
subsidizing your lifestyle choice. You can work. You're saying you do work. You do volunteer work. Okay. Yet you refuse to get a paying job and support yourself.
I've worked my whole life.
With or without a paying job, I still can't afford rent here because the rents are too dang high. That's what we need to fight against. Should I work six jobs to pay for somebody's, Hawaii vacation?
No, he wants to chastise me for not working.
Start with one job.
Yeah. He wants to chastise me for not working specifically. So let's go ahead and have this conversation.
There you go.
Well, the one issue I think that's important to say is that there's many of the people are not actually, Brittany, maybe that was her choice, and that was what happened, and some people are
right. Again, we're focusing on a large population.
I'm a sociologist, sir. I'm a sociologist, and she's the exception to the rule.
Well, he's referencing my comments, saying that Brittany was woke. Well, honestly, I really don't think that humanity should become slaves to the system just to be able to have food and
shelter. Some people can profit, but the rest of us can work for you and never get anywhere.
Is that where humanity is just heading to until we burn ourselves out?
Right.
And then what happens with
I'm a social democrat. I don't mind subsidizing my neighbors because I have a heart that's two sizes too big.
Anyone wants to call me by my first and last name, which is fine. I go by Angel out there, just so for the listeners. But my birth given is Franklin Alcantar, and there's no problem with that.
Absolutely. Well, I'm Leanne Sherwood, and I just wrote a book
Alicia
and published
Poole,
it.
KUHL, that's really me.
Yeah, and I just want to live in the kind of world
and Keith
where
Henry.
People care about each other.
Yeah.
And
Keith is an awesome guy. He's
selfish.
He's been inspiring people to set up Food Not Bombs chapters all across the world for 40 years.
Well, that was the voice of white entitlement right there.
So
that
anyway, we're about to wrap up this program here, and wanted to get to a couple of other issues. So I want to remind people that we're calling on people that support the human rights of people living outside to attend the Santa Cruz City Council meeting on December 10th.
Please do. It's our last chance to demand winter shelter before, you know, 6 weeks.
Yeah, and we also, and of course, if you're, you know, want to drive the homeless out of town, I'm sure you'll be invited
that guy,
to come do that.
Yeah, that last guy would be happy to practice hate speech against a vulnerable population.
But come to our union meeting Sunday at 5.
Yep, and we need a lot of more survival gear. People, you know, it's desperate for people. I mean, it's so painful when I see people that come for a blanket or a sleeping bag and they're just freezing. And, you know, we need more donations from 4 to 6 at outside the post office. If you want to help cook with Food Not Bombs, we cook at the Vets Hall, and that's in the basement, and that's at 12:30 Saturday and Sunday.
And I'd like to announce that in the future, we'd like to get some more voices. You know, I'm going to reach out and see if, like, our new mayor, Justin Cummings, would like to join us on this show and talk about some of these issues. I feel it's only pertinent that he puts in some, you know, commentary on these very serious issues. I was thinking about inviting City Council Member Drew Glover.
Oh, yeah.
And so we can really get this conversation going.
Yeah, I'd like to get Gavin Newsom down here someday.
Yeah, well, we need to solve these problems. And I really thank you for listening to Cement Bed.
479-1080.
KSCO.
Yep, and we'll be going next to the news, and after that, it'll be Flight 1080. And so thank you so much for listening to this edition of Cement Bed.